Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From Lower Manhattan, the center of the financial world, this is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. I'm joined today by our contributors, Joan O'Sara of the New York Times and Rana Faruhar of Time Magazine. Money market funds. For more than 30 years, they've been considered one of the safest investments. Practically everyone uses them. Businesses, government, individuals like you and me. Added up, and the total value of these funds is more than $2.5 trillion. But how safe are money market funds? There's no FDIC insurance like there is for your bank account. If there ever is a run on the fund, think George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life. So with so much money at stake, Mary Shapiro, the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, is proposing new rules to protect investors. But the industry is pushing back. So, Joe, a vote is expected later this month on these proposals. Explain to me just how vulnerable are money market funds and what is the SEC proposing?
Well, first of all, money market funds can lose money. And that's where this stems from. During the financial crisis, a big money market fund called the Reserve Fund lost money on Lehman bonds. And there was panic in the air, particularly in the government, which was afraid of a run on money market funds. And so in the aftermath, the SEC, and particularly Mary Shapiro, has been trying to do two things. One, make them safer, even though they are already pretty safe. They're not entirely safe. And secondly, also at the same time, change the way they're calculated so that people will be able to understand that they are not, in fact, bank accounts, but they are bond funds that fluctuate. And that is the essence of what she's trying to do.
So what would be the argument, Rana, against these rules? I mean, if they're going to protect investors, I would think that'd be a good thing.
I don't think that there is a real valid argument against them. What some of the people in the financial industry would say is that, well, this is going to force us to put more fees on. It's going to be costly. That's going to diminish returns. Well, returns are already pretty low in these things anyway, and I think that more people are worried about financial security. I totally agree with Joe. It's actually important to note that last summer, when the Eurozone crisis really started taking off, a lot of these funds dumped Eurozone bonds, and that was very destabilizing then. I think people are worried about this, and it's arguably the most important vulnerability in the financial sector right now. I recently wrote a column about this topic, and we got people calling in from middle America panicking, saying, I didn't know these things weren't insured. I think people do think they're just like a bank account and they need to be educated.
But that's the other point, Rana. Ever since money market funds were invented in the 1970s, they were meant to compete with bank accounts. That's why they existed. They gave a higher return than bank accounts, but they looked and felt like a bank account. And eventually people became convinced that they were the same as bank accounts. One of the reasons the industry doesn't want to change is because they're worried that once that illusion is popped, people will, in fact, take their money out of money market funds and put them back in the bank where they are insured. I mean, that does have the potential to hurt, for instance, companies that use money market funds to, put their short-term bonds. That's really what they're used for.
So where does this leave the average investor if you have to worry about these funds as well? You know, we've been talking about for some time where you park your money, where you invest. Where does that leave us?
I think it's a great question. I mean, we spoke, I think, last week about Bill Gross saying that the stock market is a Ponzi scheme. Now we have to be worried about these accounts. I mean, you can put some money in a bank account. I think some people probably are going to. I suspect that if these regulations go through, a lot of corporates are actually going to park their money in banks. But I think that there are also ways to start thinking about different asset classes in different ways. I've talked for a long time about how blue chip stocks with big global franchise around the world are as safe as certain kinds of more conservative assets like bonds.
You know, one of the things that we're talking about here is money and what to do with it. We're starting to see really a disappearance of actually using cash. That got a big push this week when we saw that Starbucks partnered with Square to start accepting payments through your phone, that you can just at some point in the future walk into a Starbucks, not even pull your phone out, and the barista will be able to take your order for a Frappuccino. So Square, this is a big deal for them, but they're competing against the real big boys in the tech world, Amazon and Google, PayPal. They're all launching their own versions. So, Rana, who's going to be the winner when it comes to getting your mobile wallet money?
Okay, well, let me start by saying I do think that bigger is better in the tech space. Apple is about 20% of the NASDAQ. I think that that company in particular is very well poised in this race for a lot of reasons. One, they already know how to make money off of mobile payments. They're pretty much the only company that does. Also, they've got a single customer privacy policy that applies across all of their businesses and products. And I think that that's really appealing to people. I think that gives them a sense of trust. This is a company that they believe believe in. They're going to trust them to store their data. And who owns your data? That's going to be the really important thing in the future.
You know, Rana, I have to say I couldn't disagree more on the privacy issue. People say they care about their privacy, but the way they act is just the opposite. They give their data to Facebook. They give their data to LinkedIn. They give their data to Google. And time and time again, we hear about privacy violations. Why, you know, just on Thursday, Google was fined $22.5 million by the FTC. Why? Because they circumvented Apple's privacy settings on its browser so they could show advertisements. You know, this happens over and over and over again with all sorts of companies, and there don't seem to be any consequences in terms of consumer behavior. You know, so I would argue that, yes, ease of use is going to matter, other things are going to matter, but is privacy really going to matter? I have my doubts.
Well, finally, let's look ahead to next week and the weeks ahead. Again, with me are Rana Faruhar of Time Magazine and Joe Nocera at the New York Times. Rana, what are you looking ahead to?
So I've been really interested, like a lot of people this week, in the Mars rover landing, the Curiosity landing. And I think this has a lot of interesting business lessons for us here at home. I mean, one of the fascinating things to me is that, you know, we can put this device on Mars and we're still arguing about how to build roads and bridges at home. And I hope that going forward, this is going to be a sort of a lesson to policymakers, but I'm also really interested in the space stimulus effect because the Curiosity program already employs about 7,000 very high-tech workers around the country, and as it goes forward, there might be more job creation from that.
Joe, what are you looking ahead to?
Well, I've been watching the Apple-Samsung patent suit because Apple is not only asking for $2.5 billion from Samsung, claiming that they basically stole all these patents for on the iPhone and the iPad, but they actually want Samsung to withdraw products from the market. So if Apple wins, Samsung is really going to be badly hurt. And if Samsung wins, it means every phone and every touchscreen is going to look a lot more like iPhones and iPads.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.